C-168. Number 10-B.
So where are we today? Today we are faced with these new developments that have gone on over the last 40 years. And it is a question, are we going back to the Dorley period and stay there instead of going back to the Dorley period to see the roots and therefore go forwards and to see the plant that comes out of those roots? It is therefore a very big question of seeing that we go forward, that we are not resisting really a new approach, that the new paradigm is not rejected. Mrs. Eddy always has that complaint that it is the unwillingness to learn all things rightly that binds Christendom with chain. It is that which binds us to go forward. There is always something within us that says, I'm happy with what I have. I stay with what I have. It's always that that sense, let's go back to the flesh pot in Egypt. The wilderness is uncomfortable. The going forward just with a promise ahead is not so nice as to go back to Egypt and fill our stomach with the old flesh pots of Egypt. Let's go forward so that we, and by going forward, this is a very important point, not to try to park the old into the new. The most important thing is to make a real good cut and burn the bridges behind ourselves so that we are not able to go backward, so that we are forced only to go forward. Don't try to park whatever you have learned up to now into a new paradigm. One always has to have within oneself a sense, what I have learned up to now has been very good, has been something that was helpful, that has brought me forward. But let it leave behind so that we are free and without burden to really open up our consciousness to something completely new. The danger all through history, in every religion, in every science, was always to try to park the old into the new. Not to let go of the old, but to take in the old religion into the new religion. When Christianity came to the Gentile and to the heathen, they would always take the heathen God and the heathen religions into the new religion. And so in science we have this very same situation, that we are not looking backward too much and said that which was helpful up to now, we want to keep, we stay with it, we want to take that on. Let's burn the bridges behind us. Let's go forward into a completely new paradigm. That's what Kuhn was saying when he was introducing that concept of paradigm in science and art, that he could see that the danger is always of mixing, and not to let go of the old. So Dorley's contribution was, so to say, to lift really science out of religion. That was in his last 10, 15 years, one of his main contribution, or his main concern, to really lift science out of religion. Now, let's not go back to religion. Let's not go back again to the old landmarks. And he introduced science in its first fundamental stages of order, of system, of the levels of science, the various levels of science. But let's go on that route. Let's see that there is more to it than just order and system and levels, that there is structure in it, that there is really holism in it, that there is dimensionalism in it, that there is cybernetics in it, that there is science versus metaphysics in it, that there is the idea of a scientific oneness against dualism in it, that there are that we can now see being through laws, and not only through statements, but to practice differently. Our whole practice becomes different. Let's see that our practice is not going back to the old, that because we are used to practice in the old way, that we are not going on practicing in the old way and try with our head and with our brain to get hold of something new, of a new paradigm. Let's do that together, that principle and practice is one, that theory and practice is one. So that if we are attuning ourselves with the new paradigm, that we also begin to practice on the basis of that new paradigm. And again, my red booklet on the spiritual breakthrough shows you that in a short way. I could really write a whole book on the development of practice. Perhaps one day I will do it, if I have time, to show that the practice of a scientist is very different from the practice of a metaphysician. And that we have to make that paradigm shift also in practice. That we go out in practice no more from the phenomena. That we go out from the capitalized term. That we are reasoning no more from a problem up to the idea, the specific idea that lies behind it. We are putting the problem right away because it doesn't exist in the 7,000-year period. And therefore, in the practice of the 6,000 and 7,000-year period, we use a completely different kind of practice. Completely different kind of practice. It takes some time to get rid of the old, to accustom oneself to the new, but you will feel as you begin that and train it for 2 or 3 years that you feel absolutely a different person and have a different attitude and much more certainty and much more power and much more security in that standpoint from which we practice. If we think about the past and present and future, we naturally also have to think about the future development of the idea. We are again at the same point where I was when I said that in 1950 I received that letter from Peggy Brook telling me that John Dorley has passed on. And that I felt now, here I am alone, I have no more a leader, I have to be now alone with the reality of being, but that infinite progression is concrete being. So today again, when a new paradigm shift is around the corner, we also have to see that very thing, that it is up to each one to take on himself the responsibility, so to say, to be used as a clear window pane through which the new paradigm, the new development can shine through. Or else we believe that with what we have today, we have found the final answer and have come to a final stage. This would really be deadly. The idea has to go on. But that is a very difficult question. Namely, that question, how can we be a medium, a window pane, through which another step forward can shine through? We always have that question that it takes quite a lot to get hold of that which is already here. Just at the time of 1950, I felt, well, I have a lot in John Dorley's books. I better go down, back, and go to those books and deep down and study those books and make it first my own before I think who is going to lead me on. Let's first get hold of what is there. So today, too, most students naturally have a feeling I haven't got hold of all that what is now in that big literature that we have. I need time. But that doesn't leave out really the question, is there someone that is pure enough so that the light can shine through and bring about a new development? That is the big question. What is necessary within ourselves to be used for such a unique situation? It's usually only one or two that can bring a turn into the development. It's not usually the big mass, the big numbers, that at one point just makes a big turn. It usually starts with a pioneer, with a spearhead, that has enough insight, enough courage, enough experience to really make that step forward. What is necessary in order that one is prepared to do it? I would say it needs really that, first of all, that making that which is available one's own. Once that is made one's own, we should see that we get the spirit of it, that we culture that not as a letter, not as an academic proposition, but as a spiritual atmosphere, so that it becomes really a spiritual attitude. That spiritual attitude then begins to gather identity, begins to crystallize within our consciousness so that it becomes crystal clear and you can see the outline of everything that has been spiritually acquired in a very definite way. And that has as principle the seed within itself. We don't have to think what should be the new. How can I be a genius that sees something new? How can I be one out of the whole multitude that is really a big shot and can see something more than all the others? This is not the attitude. It's the loving of that which one has understood that has the seed within itself. We have to remember that neither Mrs. Eddy has contributed something to the spiritual, nor John Dorley, nor I. It was always the spiritual idea that has made a contribution to the world through the channel of a Mrs. Eddy, through the channel of a John Dorley, through the channel of any pioneer. But the pioneer is necessary, but he will not be deified. Because only then when we see that the pioneer was only the tool in the hands of the idea itself, that then we put the pioneer into its right place, and that is a very humble place, and not the limelight place. It is always really the idea that leads us on, not the person that leads us on. It was not John Dorley that led us on. It was the idea of science that led us on. And so it is today, and so it is in the future. It's therefore the idea of science that has the seed within itself. Not people are such geniuses that they can bring the idea forward. It's always the love for the idea, always that awe one has for an idea, that love one has for an idea, that adoration, the adorable one that one has within oneself, that is bringing the seed to fruition. It is therefore always so that the idea has its own logic of unfoldment. That's another logic. That's not the two-value logic. That's not even the two-conceptional logic. It is that infinite logic that has its own logic and its own logic of unfoldment. No one ever knows what the future is in the line of the spiritual development. No one knows. So he cannot use his logic. He must leave it to the logic of the idea that knows what is the next step. So that we can trust really that it is the idea that has its own success mechanism within itself. That idea has its own logicity in itself. That idea has its own goal-directedness within itself. And we don't have it as people. So it is the idea of science, really, that is always sweeping down the centuries and will also in the future sweep down the centuries. Therefore, we must see that it is absolutely impossible to have a successor. The idea of science does not allow to have a successor. It was at one time so that Elijah had a successor as Elisha and put the mantle on his shoulder. That seems to be an exception, really, in the Bible. But afterwards, we have no such a transitional stage. We cannot hand down, really, the idea like a king or an emperor can down the idea to a prince or to a princess. In science, there are no hereditary princesses and princes. No, the idea chooses its own successor. So Jesus did not make that mistake to choose a successor. He left it to the Holy Ghost. Mrs. Eddy tried to make that mistake of choosing a successor, but the divine idea intervened and said, "Look here, Mrs. Eddy, you made a terrific mistake. So excommunicate your adopted son and give him a good kick in the pants and get him out of it. Generic man is your successor." John Dolly left no successor. Thank God he appointed nobody as a successor. The idea would have been stifled. Can you say stifled? Would have been destroyed.
Stifled,
yeah, stifled. The idea would have been destroyed if he had put the spiritual legacy into the hands of a human being, no matter who it would have been. So he had that terrific confidence that the idea will find its own channel to unfold and unfold. And actually it did unfold. At that time when I got that letter, as I told you in 1950, I was not at all aware that perhaps I could really contribute anything to that wonderful development that had gone on. I hadn't the faintest idea. Today I must have the courage, which I never had for a long time, to say that I did lead that idea on. Now, looking back over 40 years, I can say that because I have contributed to the science. I have not contributed to elaborating and embellishing what John Dolly said and did. I did not do that very much. But what my contribution was actually to give to that what John Dolly began to see as the discovery of Mrs. Eddy's revelation. I could add to that the methodology of learning and seeing that everyone can get hold of it. And that had, in addition to it, a further factor in it that I could unfold the idea on that basis. So John Dolly didn't make that mistake of having a successor, and I'm not going to make that mistake either. I will not name anybody as my successor. You will not be seeing that. John Dolly said, "I do everything that people don't make a headquarter out of me." And that is always the danger that the students make out of a pioneer a headquarter. The pioneer doesn't want to do that, but the students try every trick to make a headquarter out of a pioneer. And I will have to be on my toes to see that the student don't try to put me into the center of the idea. The idea is here for everybody, and therefore there will be no successor as a person. But the idea will have a successor, because nothing can repress the unfoldment of the idea. And so we do good if we entertain that consciousness that the idea can never be repressed, though sometimes it seems that it has all been in vain and that we have worked and run in vain, as Paul was saying when he was imprisoned in Rome. What is the future? We have come to the end of the third 40 years, and we feel that we have really got a lot out of the textbook, and that there is practically nothing anymore that we see that we can squeeze out of that textbook at the moment, that we have a good overall understanding of the structure of that textbook. But there is a future. And as far as I see it, it is the following. We have had the Bible as a book of revelation, so that we could see God worked his way in the Old Testament, New Testament, by bringing out a teaching that is laid down in the Bible. Then we have seen that the idea of God was working further and revealing itself further in the form of a textbook. But the idea of God is universal. It cannot be limited to the Old Testament or to the textbook. The idea of God works through another book, through the book of life, through the book of the universe. It is not so that God only reveals itself and manifests itself in two books. It also reveals itself through the universe, the book of life. And therefore, my feeling is that the future lies there, that now another period is breaking in where we have to interpret not only the Bible, not only the textbook, which we have done to a great extent, not in details, but that is not interesting, but in the deep structure of those two books. And I feel that because the Christ is working universally, he is also working in the universe, so that the universe is just the same, also a book of revelation of a completely different kind, just as the textbook is of a different kind than the Bible, that the Christ idea was always working through any religion, through any scientist, through any thinker, no matter to what kind of science he belonged, no matter to what kind of religion he belongs. The Christ is the Christ. There is only one God, one Christ, and therefore only one manifestation of that Christ, a true universe, a Christianity which is not Christianity, a Christianity that is universal, without doctrines, without religions, without sciences, just the one science of God, the proto-science called God. That proto-science is that which we have to discover. And see now that we have seen that proto-science in its structure in the Bible, we have seen it in its structure in the textbook. What remains to be unearthed is that we see that deep structure also in the other sciences and in the other religions. There they may be under the cover of a lot of human thinking and human and material elements and phenomena, but deep down must be that structure of science also. Or else we must admit that there are two gods in the world ruling. One God that rules us, the Bible and the textbook, and another God that rules the world. But if there is only one, I think we should be able to unearth that deep structure in the universe. And I feel that we have today the opportunity to have enough command on the scientific tools that we can do that. So I wouldn't be really surprised if the future would lie there where we hope it would lie, namely that we see one world that combines Christianity with science, or that combines religion as a whole with science, and that there are no more two fields, namely only one field, science as a proto-science. A proto-science gives us the categories of being that are that are those that work in the Bible, in the textbook, and in all the other sciences and arts. So I wouldn't be surprised if slowly, by culturing what we know about the system of the Bible and the textbook, would also reveal to us what is going on in the whole world, so that the world must be interpreted from that new standpoint of science. Then, only then, we can say there is only one science that interprets the universe, that does not only interpret a little part of humanity, the spiritual, religious part of humanity, but the whole of humanity, the whole world. This is, I think, what will come about. Over the last 40 years, I was trying that out many, many times, and I was absolutely unsuccessful. Right back in 1949, I was trying to try it out through Dunois' presentation of evolution and show it that that is nothing else but the days of creation. It didn't really find a receptive ear. Afterwards, I was trying to give whole lecture series in Zurich on the science of life, trying to show that what goes on in the world is actually only something that shadows forth really the fundamentals of Christian science. I was trying again and again. Even John Dawley tried it in 1949 with his book on God and Science, and it wasn't successful. He hoped that the men in the street would understand him. Today, perhaps that book is more read than at that time, because the time is now riper than 40 years ago. And so today, through our knowledge of the system, I think we should be able to do it. And you are called up to help us. Thank you.